bullet where the people...
A little more compassion is the first time I didn't arrest him.
This guy had the wrong today, so I arrested him. So this was a man for fair with a pay. I don't know what it was for.
Didn't say what it was.
So we don't even know if it was a bicycle.
I don't know what it was for.
It was an infraction of some sort.
I don't know what it was.
Because that again was...
It was a negative or all one, so I didn't have any choice.
Well, not that I wish to put you in trouble, maybe, but previously you gave him a warning. Now you didn't give him a warning.
I hadn't confirmed the warrant before. I was aware that there was a warrant out there, but I hadn't confirmed any of the information. So I wasn't sure that it actually existed. I told him to go check on it.
And you came up and asked him about it, or checked on it yourself?
I checked on it myself.
Well, there you have it. The perfectly reasonable police side of the issue, which should clear this matter up for those of us who have any doubts about the Santa Cruz justice system. I'm not suggesting that your question be any way inaccurate, but the question of hauling someone off in handcuffs for what he says is $104, you know, we don't know, of course, but, and you say, you don't know what the warrant is either.
I don't have an idea
what the actual violation of the warrant was issued for. In truth, it must be said that usually warrants do not give that information to the police officer who's looking at them. I guess sometimes they do.
The information I get comes from the dispatcher. She simply tells me that he's got a warrant for his arrest.
But she presumably has access to that information.
You have to call the sheriff's office.
So it's not immediately there on her computer screens.
Not all the information.
The fact that when we run somebody for warrants, we get a hit from the computer, but we can't rely on the hit that we get in the computer as confirmation that the warrant exists.
So you have to pick up the phone and call the sheriff's office, and they have to physically pull the hard copy of the warrant signed by the judge before we know that the warrant is in fact valid. Once that process is complete, then we're mandated by law to arrest the individual.
And presumably we would know that the warrant was filled when they pulled the warrant.
If I had requested that information, yes. Right. Josh will get to see it. It'll be over at the jail when he gets there waiting for it.
I presume it will be held until... Yeah, Monday or Tuesday.
Either Lex Barrow or until he goes before a judge. Whichever comes first. So.
You really want to make the decision to look at the warrant when you saw him on the street?
Yeah. I haven't seen him since.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. This is the first contact I've had with him, the first time I've seen him. Was when I pulled up here today.
Do you have any questions for the news media?
No.
Thank you.
It's totally unrelated to what we're talking about today.
Right. Well, it's about 15 to 3. We're on the mall, talking to
Robert Stephan.
And Robert, you're shielded from the sun as ever by your large parasol, black and white umbrella. And you said you've had some interesting encounters recently?
It just happened actually just about an hour ago and about 15 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Well, the same person, someone who's told me he lives around here, he has his apartment apparently on the fifth floor of Column Bar Inn. That's what he told me. And he comes down here normally drunk and smoking and bothers me. And today what he decided to do was yell at me, tell me to leave, shove my stuff on the ground. I tried to walk him away and he followed me, I walked back and called me names and told me I had to leave. And so finally I decided to make
about an hour ago?
About an hour ago.
Did anyone intervene on your behalf?
No one intervened on my behalf.
People watched, or they ignored?
What was the reaction? They watched and ignored. And they watched, I guess. I don't know. If you guys ignore, I don't know. They watched. They didn't do anything. There was no violence, really.
Yeah.
No.
I think you might have hit my arm, but I didn't notice.
And anyway, so I walked over to the phone and called the police.
I figured they should do their job. And did they?
Well, they sent out an officer,
mm-hmm.
and the officer took a description,
mm-hmm.
and then he left.
Yeah.
And then about 45 minutes later, which was about 10 minutes ago, a firecracker exploded on my umbrella, and I turned around and looked, and they were the same fellow. And I got a little bit better description, and the police had told me that I should call, and if I got a better description, I did. So I went over and called him again and gave him another better description. And that's that.
What does this guy look like anyway?
He's about 5'8", has graying hair, dark, turning gray, not as gray as yours. He has a beard, but it's shortly trimmed. He's wearing sunglasses, a gray shirt with gray squares separated by white lines, jeans, sandals, and his fingers are deformed from birth defect. They're a little shorter and squat.
Both hands or one hand?
Both hands, I believe. And he's drunk. He's often drunk. Mm-hmm. He's drunk today.
Well, I'll try to have a word with him if I see him.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, well, you had a... Ah, that's good. I thought there was a piece of popcorn in your beard, but it's gone now.
Okay.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you very much.
Talking to the Smiths, that gang of PC Freedom Party closet socialists, who are wandering the mall with a petition, of all things, for Mr. Joe Grossman, who's going to be challenging Representative Sam Farr, as we say in Santa Cruz, far out.
That's exactly what we say. Far out. That's what we're going to do.
Grossman is not much better than him, as far as I'm concerned, but any poet in a storm. So,
I think he's a million times better. I just totally disagree with you.
Unusual math going here, but let me ask you,
maybe a slight exaggeration.
Yeah, so, I know that the Borders Depot Duda and the Department Store Ordinance is coming up on Tuesday. Are you going to be at the City Council meeting there, Maureen?
I probably will be at the City Council meeting. I'm not sure I'm going to speak on Borders. I have other issues with the City Council.
And you don't take orders from Borders?
No, and I don't support Borders because of the extremely bad anti-union tactics.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they fired, not locally, because they aren't local, but in their massive franchise system, they have fired many employees over the years for union organizing. And I am told that in some places the union has been successful in getting in, but not due to any kind of cooperation from Borders. And I don't know if people ever got their jobs back either, the ones that were fired from Borders in various cities across the country.
Now, you also know that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is having an 11 o'clock meeting tomorrow in the Rise Zone to plan a season of protests downtown against the sleeping ban.
No, I did not know that, but I do now.
Indeed, if you want to give a call to 43 HUF, leave your email address, which you are apparently still in the 14th century on, but
yeah.
Eventually may be able to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yes, that century.
As soon as we do have an email address, we'll be on it with you. And
you're invited to come down to the Rise Zone at 224 Walnut.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's where all the political, fashionable types meet and so forth. Meet and greet and...
If able to do that, I will. I need to be at whatever sessions that the City Council meets because
they might
be giving more money away to the wrong kinds of projects.
Our City Council give away money to the wrong kinds of projects? Surely we must be referring to Capitola or that hard-hearted Scotts Valley City Council.
No, I don't have any information on Capitola or Scotts Valley.
Why don't you take your concerns to them, as Mike Rodkin has often said to me?
I intend to eventually get to them after we deal with the county and the city. I think we've got a huge job to do. Out of all the cities at this point in time, it looks as though Watsonville is the most aggressive in trying to build affordable housing for people. And they certainly aren't getting the cooperation from the county in doing so. So it's a countywide issue for us, and it's just that the city has prime property that there should be low-income housing situated on, and I don't think it's going to happen without a lot of political pressure from the populace here. One of the things they're trying to pass is a one-year extension on excluding this whole downtown area from having to have the inclusionary 15% moderate and low-income housing when a project goes up. They want another year exemption. I didn't even realize it.
But these poor merchants have been fighting the earthquake turmoil for years. Surely you don't want to deny them another year, possibly another decade.
Oh, yes, I do. I want to deny them. They've had 10 years of this, and if they can't get it together in 10 years,
I mean, what about poor Neil Cooney, much beleaguered?
It's not, he's not really the issue here. It has to do with people who want to develop market rate housing. The issue is market rate housing, condos and things around here instead of low income. And I'm saying that 15% is a measly amount. And we haven't ever reached the 15%, not a single year. And it's time to really get some teeth in it.
It's a sort of a minor payoff, that essentially they don't, this is part of Proposition, what, O, from 1979?
Yeah, but there are, I mean...
Always the developers buy their way out from under this?
At a very low cost, actually. Right. The city refuses to have what I consider reasonable rates. The county has actually reasonable rates. You have to pay close to $100,000 per unit or more in some cases, in order to get out of it. And
did the county ever refuse $7 million recently?
Yes. This is a situation where Marty Wormhout voted with Simons from the 2nd District and Butts from the 1st District in order to not be tied to the rules of the state of California, or the strings that the state of California might attach to making us eligible for millions of dollars. Approximately, we'd be eligible for up to $3.8 million a year.
They agree to do low-income housing, right?
It's not just the low-income housing as part of it, but in the case of Marty, she objected to a model program that the state proposed as part of this compromise that they've been working on for 4 years. No, 5 years. People who develop, for 18-month period, people who develop a second unit on their property would not have to be under any controls of the county, such as rent and for the future use of that property, mostly the making it affordable. So it actually exempted certain units that probably won't be built anyway from being affordable. So she did have something to hang her hat on. It's just that for that little bit, it seemed not enough to turn down that kind of money. It's needed all over the county. Watsonville said if no one else wants it in their district, the 4th District would be happy to have the money because they want to build farm worker housing. They want to build housing for very low income people. And at this point, they seem to be the only ones aggressively trying to do that around here.
Probably being controlled by the Chicano Mafia, which has displaced those fine white gentlemen who used to run the county in that area.
Believe it or not, those words weren't used at the meeting, but there were attacks on how many children people tend to have and all kinds of issues that were based on immigration, actually. Not
They're concerned about all those immigrant French people coming over, in other words?
Yes, out of the border immigrants.
All those Serbs or immigrants, all those Kosovars?
At any rate, there's going to have to be a lot more pressure put on the County Board of Supervisors as well as the City Council in order to get affordable housing built. And there's a lot of rhetoric around it, but not very much action. And we want to see if we can change that.
What can an average person do who wants to do something about this?
Well, you can join with other people. SCAN now has a housing committee. And one thing that's already come out of that housing committee is the formation of a board to create a Santa Cruz community housing land trust.
What is that in common English?
A housing land trust or a land trust, the main purpose is, in this case, is trying to buy up land, get land bought up, and there, but you become a nonprofit. You get it, your 501c3. You get money from local jurisdictions, you get money, you know, from whatever sources, you know, want to contribute to it, grant writing and businesses and what have you. And you use that money to buy up land and to build housing that's affordable. People who live in this kind of housing generally own their housing, but they don't own the land under it. And when they move, they get in for maybe $1,000, and their rents, their monthly payment is kept low and affordable. And when they move, they can't make a profit. They can sell their housing, but they can't make a big profit off of it. It goes back into the land trust, and it's continually used for people who qualify for affordable housing. And this is forever. It's in perpetuity.
Anything else you want to add about this current situation here in Santa Cruz regarding the rip-off rents and the chances of changing that?
I also want to say that we need to really pressure the city council to just plain lift the camping ban because of the outrageous situation here in Santa Cruz.
We will be at the Rhizome tomorrow at 11 naturally to become a key part of the struggle downtown against the merchants between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
I don't know how key I'll be, but I'll try to be at the meeting.
You're listening to Maureen Smith of the Peace and Freedom Club. Thank you, Maureen.
You're welcome.
I'm talking to a famous woman, but who wishes to remain anonymous in this case, here at Pacific Avenue. We're in front of the Irish Pub at about 3:05 on Sunday. And I've just been told that the hosts are at it again, misinforming homeless people about their right to have a sign. Sources and square change.
How
are
you doing?
Hey, how are you doing, man?
Good.
Good.
Hey, thank you.
And so in protest against this abuse, because signs are legal, up and down the street, any time of the day or night, provided you're not blocking traffic, I am taking a sign myself which has any spare change now without my knee, and I'm waiting for the shekels to come rolling in. Because I'm just, I'm not saying anything. I'm in a seated position here, hoping to attract some buxom woman perhaps sit on my lap and give me $100, and that might happen. Probably unlikely. But in any case, here I am, hoping, the host should know better, and I would like to file a complaint on your behalf, but if you would prefer not to, we'll leave it at that. Anyway, good to see you again.
Sure.
We're entering the host's HQ.
Hey, guys.
I'm wondering if it's legal to hold up a sign that says spare change on the avenue here in Santa Cruz?
Yes, it is. The only accepted criminal law is
And why are your hosts informing people that they can't hold up signs? Please advise them, particularly the Hispanic host, that he is an error in telling people to put away their signs. Inappropriate behavior on his part.
Is that all that the sign
says? Any spare change? Question mark. What the sign said.
Okay.
It's also legal to ask for spare change from a standing position if you're more than 3 feet away from a person and 10 feet away from a building, 15 feet crosswalk, during a daylight hour. All those things are also legal. Which I assume you are not watching people do. You are saying that the hosts are specifically telling people they cannot ask for spare change verbally on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah. Well, yes, that's what I was told in my training. That's considered aggressive, and I mean, that is...
Did Bob tell you that, or did the police officer tell you that?
I believe they both did.
Do you have the name of the police officer who so informed you?
Yeah, it is. The 1100
again. Well, I was trained by my body, but I'm not sure which one.
I'm
pretty sure both of them told me, but not as sure as I can be. I know at least one of them told me. And they said there was an ordinance against actually asking for a spare change because
You should go to the city hall and get the ordinance on panhandling.
The ordinance on panhandling is very specific about the limitations of asking for spirit change. I know, I fought the ordinance. And when it was passed, I'm quite aware of the differences. Malahea has a notorious record of harassing old people on the street. He harassed one 67-year-old man who had all had was a sign. He said, "You can't sit down with that sign." He told them this twice and ended up getting a ticket for it, which we had to go to the city attorney to get dismissed last year. The name of the man that he gave the ticket to was John Telfair. You want to check the record on that. So he's not your best source. And I hate to think that good-hearted, well-intended hosts are being misled into misinforming the public. Although a part of me would say, please, make an arrest. I'd love to sue the shit out of this particular organization, because I see this happening again and again. You serve as the eyes and ears of the police force, which does the duty. This is a mutual organization, which is essentially a cleanup group that goes around harassing people, although you don't call it that. And it's not that I have any personal against you, but I really resent the velvet glove over the iron fist underneath this. And it really, it's unfortunate because people come here who need jobs. You know, it's not a very good job, but it's a job. And you guys do it, so. Anyway, that's what I just came in to suggest to you. That you just inform the people again, you being the organization, not you, Charles. And that I'd like to see it stop. And my name's Robert, and I work with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'd like you to give me a call and let me know what's actually happening around this. The number's easy to remember, it's 423-HUF. I appreciate that, Charles.
I'll be sure to make note of it.
I'll be hoping for a call day or tomorrow, maybe. Just let me know if they're going to continue this policy, then I think that, we should probably bring it to public attention in a more dramatic fashion. If you guys are going to follow the law, and much as we dislike the law, at least we're aware that's what you're doing.
Problem of a light that's out at the intersection of Ocean Street Extension at the on-ramp to Highway 1 by the cemetery. The light is not functioning and it's very difficult to see where the actual ramp is when you're making a left turn. And Caltrans has succeeded in putting a new head on the lamp, but there's no one of them in there, and it's 6 months. I just thought I'd report that
to you. It's a different department.
To you, Public Works has made requests to Caltrans, but no progress. I do also want to speak of one other thing which is not on tonight's agenda, although it's related, and that has to do with the clauses restricting bookstores in the Gateway Project and the J. Paul building. As someone whose work has been largely in redevelopment, I appreciate how much difficulty it is to put together a package like the Gateway. There's an enormous amount of work that the redevelopment director puts into this. And for council members, or former council members, or whoever's been quoted in the paper, as saying that these restrictions sort of just happened by the redevelopment agency outside of any public hearing or any public notice, even to the council, is absurd. And I am really angry at these people making our redevelopment director the fall guy for these actions. She has been working feverishly to try to get projects put together and to get, when financing doesn't seem to be available because they don't have tenants, she has been going for years to try to get tenants, and she would not knowingly put restrictions on any tenant who wanted to come into a project. And for council members to duck that issue and to try to say that this is all her idea is dissembling of an order that I am not comfortable with. I only hope that when the grand jury looks into this, that when people are under oath, they will come up with a different way of looking at what they're saying about this.
My name is Carl Wilson. I live in Baltic Street, Pennsylvania. I came here tonight, largely this morning, but I have something to say about a broader context. I think that in a broader context is not appropriate as the rest of the time. This phenomenon of a storm moving in, is not fully one case. We've got other cases going on in the county, you know that. And restrictive ordinances are one way, and zoning and things like that, an important way of dealing with problems. I think one positive aspect can be taken and should be taken.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it sounds like your comments are really going towards the ordinance, which is quite broad.
I was told that what I had to say would not be allowed in the focus of the ordinance, is not directly on the ordinance, but on issues surrounding it.
I don't want to told you that, but anything for the surrounding ordinance is totally acceptable at that time. Well, you really did that. Sorry. Let me just check on, because you did speak last time, so I'd be sure that those speakers who did not speak to us at the last regular meeting, they want to come next. We sort of have this policy that those who didn't speak at the first. Okay. Want to go ahead? I just want to check. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and my City Council members. My name is Michael Smith, and I spoke before the Council previously on the issue of the two supervisors and this with the police, and I am in direct opposition to the previous speaker here this evening. I think the two questioned by me here, particularly Mr. Crone and themselves, in a very professional manner. And as opposed to the gentleman's father being a police officer, I was a police officer for 30 years, and I stand very, very strongly in support of the police when they arrive, but I'm very, very concerned not only about our city, but throughout the country with the police who change testimony, evidence, and so forth in many, many cases. So I think we have to hold them to a very high standard, and I do hope and agree with this gentleman that if there is evidence that the police had lied or coerced or any other thing in certain circumstances, that should be brought out, and so the public is quite aware there is a current investigation, an independent investigation going on surrounding the May 22nd arrest and when the police were qualified whether they actually acted in the best interest of the public in arresting the demonstrators, so I fully support the two council members. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council members, members of the community, the question has been asked, do police officers lie? My name is Robert Williams. And I work with a group called SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. Our group doesn't believe all police officers are abusive. But when police are abusive, it's a particularly important matter because they have special privileges and powers under our laws that ordinary citizens don't have, plus, of course, they have lethal force. And they usually have a very well-funded and well-organized union, an association to protect them and to legally back them up against the ordinary citizen who has very little. One of the speakers asked that lying police officers be pointed out to him, and I think that's an appropriate request. I would like to direct him to an individual who has been spreading misinformation. I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious. Officer Powers has been responsible for informing neighbors on the Almar Street area that they have no recourse when vehicles are parked on their street because the camping ordinance or the speaking ban sections of the camping ordinance are no longer in effect. This is not true, as Officer Howers probably does know, and certainly should know, if he does not know that already. He has been lobbying the neighborhoods to press for no parking signs, no parking zones, to drive people in their vehicles further and further from any kind of safe, well-lit areas to sleep in. The only legal places they have to sleep, these people in their vehicles, they're being driven from. Unfortunately, of course, the law makes this the case, as the mayor buyers 11 to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban, which continues to plague our community. The general public has been denied the information that not only do most of them reject this absurd, cruel law, which punishes over 1,000 people each night with vulnerability to hate crime meetings and legal penalties, $54, and higher fines as well if they fail to make those tickets. Not only does the general public think the sleeping ban is a shame and a disgrace, but the Council's own Homeless Issues Task Force has been trying for at least 3 weeks to bring this issue to City Council attention, but for some reason the mayor has been unwilling to let this item come onto the agenda even as an information item. I think this is shocking, and I think it's also shocking that the council member who created the Homeless Issues Task Force, when informed of this last night at his Cafe Pergolisi meeting, stated that it was okay with him to hold up the whole issue just to sit on the back burner until January, when a midterm report would happen. I think it's important that the community know that the mayor's own association, the council member's own Homeless Issues Task Force, has found their law to be a disgrace, abusive, and unworkable. And I encourage you to put it on the agenda so that people can know at least what your Homeless Issues Task Force is saying. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to address us on our communications item not on tonight's agenda? Further, we are going to move our agenda along and go to item number after 24, which is 219 Fern Street. This is an appeal of the Zoning Board's approval of a administrative use and design permit for 8 single-room occupancy units on 13,300 square foot lot in variance to the city's 100 foot variance setback. Good evening. This is an appeal. I just want to comment. A lot of people ask me why you're doing this first tonight when you have such a major issue coming after this. And it is important to schedule this first because it's time sensitive. It is an appeal and it needs to be heard. And we need to hear that and make a decision. Because we have these guidelines that within 45 days you have to act on appeal. So the idea was we had to do it tonight. We need to get it over with and not delay it. So we are having this first tonight. Thank everyone for being patient on this particular item. It is a certainly important item for the neighbors as
This is one of the neighbors who's against it.
Why is he against it?
Because he thinks that he's got a nice quiet neighborhood because at night there's a business that it's part of the commercial zone, probably West Carter. So at night it's really quiet over there. And so this guy wasn't quiet. A 7-room single occupancy residence right next door to him. Because it won't be quiet anymore.
Not in my backyard. He suggests possibly 5 miles off the coast.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much 5 miles off the coast.
Any other direction?
Move from New Jersey coastline?
No, I mean from the Pacific coastline, 5 miles west.
Oh, west of the coastline.
Out of the ocean. It's already been quiet out there.
Some Which prediction, Scott? How's this one going to go?
This one here?
Yeah.
I think the city council will approve it. I mean, if they're going to approve the Dolphin Woody project, how is this housing? You know, so, I mean, they better be across the board in favor of housing. If they're willing to relocate 10 people in the flats and then build housing that they can't afford to move back into, they better just allow anybody to build an apartment to be there.
Let's talk more about that Dolphin Woody thing. Scott, this afternoon you were stepping and you were here and you said that the city council took a significant step in actually, do I understand you probably endorsing the Dolphin Woody project above other projects in the beach flats as like affordable housing or low-income housing project?
Right, what they had, it was a, they had five alternatives in the beach flats, and instead of just saying that the beach flats was a target area, actually Mike Rockin made a motion targeting the beach flats and specifying $4.7 million to be spent down there, but not specifying an actual specific plan, one of the five alternatives. And when he got done making his motion, the mayor spoke up and said that she had to be more specific and actually pick a specific alternative, which she said was the Dolphin Woody, and focus on that above all the other alternatives.
And what Catherine says goes, right?
Pretty much. I mean, Hernandez and Matthews were instantly on board. Rockin instantly was, of course, in favor of Dolphin Woody, and Tim sadly was in favor of it.
Tim brought his little wagon along to help out Catherine.
And Christopher and Keith spoke out against it in the very beginning, but then at the end voted for it. And even though this isn't mean, this thing is, definitely going to be built, but this is the first step to that becoming an eventual reality.
What is the resolution and how is it phrased?
Well, what it is that they would prioritize, instead of prioritizing the beach flats as a target area for this housing money, they're going to prioritize the Dolphin Woody project as their beach flats housing priority,
right,
and not necessarily eliminate the other four altogether, but have the staff flesh out Dolphin Woody more and have Mercy Housing come up with a way of presenting this to the public.
Now, did Keith and Sugar and Crone, did they object to this, and if so, how and why?
Well, initially, Crone objected to it because a lot of the council members didn't have the information packets from the previous week when they did the housing stuff, because it wasn't included in this week. I guess to save paper, they just said, bring your own stuff. A number of the council members didn't have it with them, although it was in their nearby office. So Cole initially said, well, let's wait on this. Just designate beach flats, not be project specific, and just table this discussion until later when everybody has their information. And then Catherine was like, oh, well, we've already read it all, we don't need it in front of us. And I mean, she was ready to go without even having the information. And then she slowly got talked into waiting till the end of the meeting, closer to 6 o'clock, to make the decision so that they could at some point have a break and go get the information.
And then the public
Rockin said, well, how about if we do a 3-minute break right now? We'll just run and get the information, and we'll be right back, and we can continue this same discussion without having to put it off till later. And the public was not allowed to speak. The public hearing was ended last Tuesday evening.
So in other words, when a really meaty and substantive proposal was on the table, the public was muzzled.
Right. There was a number of us in the audience, I think five in all, who had filled out green cards because it wasn't actually posted on the agenda that the public would not be allowed to speak on that item. So none of us assumed or hoped that we would be able to. Five of us filled out green cards and submitted them to the clerk And before the item even came up, Catherine announced that we would not be able to speak on it.
Free speech, Chris Cron immediately moved to reopen the public hearing.
Well, actually, Phil tried to talk to Keith when Keith went out to run to the bathroom or something. Phil Bear tried to talk to Keith about it, and Keith was too busy asking Phil to call people to get him here to the evening meeting to be concerned about whether or not people, the five people in the audience that wanted to speak on this issue were allowed to speak.
So Sugar was concerned about that issue?
No, he was concerned about tonight's issue. He wasn't really concerned whether or not the people in the audience that wanted to speak on this were allowed to speak, even two or three minutes apiece. That would have been 10 or 15 minutes of their time, you know.
Has the council passed the scan restriction that there'd be no relocation without previous housing or something?
Yeah, like that? I mean, there was a discussion about that. Crane and Sugar both brought up relocation, which I was glad to hear. And yeah, they had, Keith brought up that the relocation law doesn't really supply enough to be adequate for the people that live there. And he wanted to make sure that everybody that lived there, whether they were on the lease or not, was covered, and that they would be given adequate money to relocate and to exist for 42 months. And so then Catherine called Cyril Cirillo off, the head of redevelopment, and she said, well, a year and a half ago, before the beach plan, the council adopted a new relocation policy which states that our relocation laws in Santa Cruz will be whichever law is the best for the people. If it's the federal law, the state law, or a local ordinance.
What if they're all bad?
If they all screw the people, that's all the better for redevelopment.
I see. Well, so what was the significance of what she said?
The significance of what she said was nothing, really. I mean, she didn't really...
What about the concerns of Sugar and Crone about there being adequate relocation fees?
Well, she tried to address Sugar's one concern that everybody that was in a household would be counted. She said, well, right now, if there's six people in a one-bedroom, they really belong in a three-bedroom, and we were trying to find them a three-bedroom house. But Keith didn't say, well, are you going to give them enough money to rent a three-bedroom house? Well, he didn't take it that next step to find out if there'd be the cushion of money there to make up the difference between the rent they're now paying on a one-bedroom house and a three-bedroom house in another part of town, which is going to cost probably five times more than what they're paying now. And that's the real important issue, is are you going to give these people $125 a month? That's not going to pay the difference in rent. And that's what relocation law allocates. It's $125 a month per rental unit.
Well, how long did this entire debate take?
It actually took a couple hours.
On the Dolphin Lake?
No. The whole low-income housing thing that they didn't finish talking about last time. The Dolphin Lake portion of it, I would say, was 40 or 45 minutes.
Did anything new come out as, for example, what the timetable would be? What actually have they decided? They decided to make this the highest priority that their staff is going to get information on? Is there any debate about whether it should be this project or another?
Crowley was saying, why are we picking this project over the other four? What's the compelling reason here to act on this one?
And he was answered by?
The land is for sale, they believe. There's willing sellers. It then came out in, what's her name, Elizabeth Vogel was asked to come up and say whether the Dolphin Marine property was being sold by willing sellers, and she said that she believed the Lee property was for sale. She didn't know about the Dolphin.
So it really was not clear.
It wasn't totally clear.
The projects are not for sale at the moment, other pieces of property.
Well, actually, where I live, that piece of property is for sale along with the house next door to it, which if you tore down that house also, my landlord before was promised by redevelopment that if he combined both of those lots, he could replace the two units with a five-unit unit. So, I mean, there's five units right there. They could increase by, 2 years to three. You know, we could take 2 years by three, so we have 5 years.
Were any of the other proposals specifically brought up as a good alternative?
Yeah, really, no. I mean, Christopher Crowe was trying to talk about the parking lot alternative, which would take away the seaside parking lots where they park cars in the residential area on the grass. And they said, oh, the whole idea of the eminent domain would take at least a year. But then afterwards, later on in the conversation, they were saying, well, this housing thing is going to take 5 years to pull off. I mean, if they go with Dolphin Lee and see Dolphin Lee from now until it's over, it's going to take at least 5 years. So if you just, I mean, the parking lot deal, they said 1 year of eminent domain trial, right, you know, of court battles for eminent domain. And we would have 4 more years to get a project built. And it would still be on the same timeline as Dolphin Lake.
But would you be giving Elizabeth the support she needs as a Mercy housing?
Well, actually, I'm sure that if they did a different project in a different part of the beach flats, Elizabeth's little company of neo-Nazi Vatican goosesteppers.
Oh, it looks like this is being exposed here?
Would be building it.
So, you're anti-Papos, Dave.
Anti who?
You're sort of a know-nothing anti-Catholic, is that what we're hearing here?
Yeah.
Well, enough said. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Actually,
we talked to Patty.
Was he there as well? No. So you were there and Phil Bear and only a few others in the audience.
Right. Olivia Briggs, what's her name, Smith?
Elena Smith?
No, Maureen Smith.
Were any of them dismayed or were they all pleased with this?
Well, it seemed like Maureen Smith was pleased, Sandy Sayer was pleased. Phil, myself, and Allegra were all displeased. Actually, Allegra left the place crying. So.
Betrayed again. Thank you, Councilmember Chris Crump.